I assume that we are all students and we are trying to study a very important theme, namely, what is ideal education? And since we have from Sri Aurobindo and the mother a luminous expositions on education, we return from time to time to Sri Aurobindo the mother so that we try to measure our own thinking on the subject to verify, to confirm, to correct and to enrich ourselves. Now, we all have, who have been educated in one way or the other, in schools and colleges, some kind of illusion. Namely, we know what education means. I'm talking to you friendly, in a friendly manner, not to criticize ourselves, and I include myself in the criticism. Because each one of us has been a student. Each one has undergone a process of education. Therefore, this illusion arises. Everyone has an experience of education and therefore we feel we know what is education. It is later on when we reflect more and more that we find that education is one of the most difficult subjects to understand. And that what we think we understand of education is only a partial glimpse which we derived in our experience, which was also a partial experience. And we did not have a panoramic view of life, panoramic view of the processes of life. And since education is basically a preparation for life, and also a preparation for preparing ourselves to do something with regard to life, then we begin to feel that we need to make a quest in the field of education. In any case, this is true of me, and I can only tell you that since the age of 12, I have been thinking on education. As a child, I was thinking on education. Then I came across the first educational thought that came to me was Dayanand Saraswati, one of the great educationists of our times in India. Then I studied Tagore. That was another educational influence on me. Then I studied Gandhi. All this I had done by the age of 17. I had made studies of educational philosophies of these. And then I began to study what is called the Western system of education. And then I came to Sri Aurobindo. And then I began to become a serious student of education. And even now, when I'm talking to you after 50 years of my study, of these problems of education, I still feel I am a young boy knocking at the doors of education. So what I am talking is, you can say, prattle of a boy. And kindly take it as that. And I invite everybody on that platform. Now, one of the definitions of education that I have arrived at is the following. First, education is a deliberate process. I underline the word deliberate. It's a deliberate process of accelerating the normal development of human progress. Human beings normally progress even when the regress is a movement towards progress ultimately, it's a spiral movement. So in a sense we might say the individual, even if left by himself, the very process of life is a teacher. Therefore it is rightly said that life is the greatest teacher of life. And it is true, we don't need education as such. Because life itself is a teacher. You are living, therefore you are being educated by life itself. But that life itself teaches us that you can be educator. And therefore as an educator, you start looking at life in a different manner. And then you ask the question, how can life be aided in its own process of educating everybody? And when an educator enters into life process and in conducting life of students, then he discovers that there is a method of accelerating what life normally does it in a tardy manner. And it is this deliberate process of accelerating is a very difficult process. If you accelerate too fast, you may kill the child. If not physically, even psychologically, you kill the child. If you do not know what is human progress, you may misguide everybody. Therefore, you have to know two things. You have to know rightly what is the meaning of human progress. And secondly, you have to know how to accelerate the normal processes of life so that human being really achieves human progress as best as one can. Now, it is for this reason, this being a very delicate process, there are two opposing tendencies in all educational thought. One is what I call in normal terms process of hammering. This was the system of education in the past when teachers were supposed to hammer the children. What is called training, hammering, pushing, molding the child according to your own wishes, and so on. The opposite tendency is you allow the child freely, do not disturb, follow the inclinations of children, they want to do this, they want to do that, allow them. Education comes by gradual experience. Education comes to the children leisurely. Anything that is done very fast and in a crushing way, ultimately it evaporates. Now both the tendencies are correct and there are truths in both. And we do not know how to reconcile these two. Therefore among educationists there is a constant battle. Some take this standard stand, others take the other stand. Now, many of us who have been progressive in education, they have discarded the hammering process of education. I think all of us agree that education is not a hammering process. We all share this progressive view that education is a process of free growth, a process in which you grow according to inclinations, and the task of the teacher is just to help here, a little there, and to mold according to the children's inclinations. And yet, all the progressive educationists at a certain time come to conclusion it doesn't work. It's a fact. Bertrand Russell was one of the freest in this field of education. And he made a very big experiment in education. He took a number of children in his own home, and they were allowed to do whatever they wanted. They even used to sit on his body. They used to deal with his spectacles in any way they liked. And he tolerated everything and freely allowed them. Even he ultimately came to a conclusion that this is not all. Education is still something else, not this. You know, once I asked the mother, and this is a very interesting answer that she gave me, and this is very helpful. There was a big movement in our own school at the ashram. Children should be given complete freedom. This was the slogan at a given time in our school. Liberté totale. Total freedom to the child. Par the parole, par the program, par the exam. No exam, no curriculum, and no talks, even lectures. No lectures, no curriculum, and no examination. Children should be allowed complete freedom, and whatever they want to study, you give them the help to study or to work. Even if they want to chat, you should allow them to chat. At a given stage, mother even said you should have a room of chatting. Where children want to come to chat, they can come and they let them chat. Par the parole, don't talk, don't no lectures. There was a time when there were no lectures at all in the whole school, excepting for languages, 3 hours a day in a given language. But there were no lectures at all. So we made all kinds of experiments to show that we passed through a very revolutionary period of educational experiment. And we had mother's constant guidance on many of the things. And then in a very important stage of this experimentation, mother told me, a good teacher is one who makes children choose what he wants them to choose through his own inclinations. Now this is a very beautiful answer that we got, at least I got from the mother. Yes, I will repeat it. A good teacher is one who induces the child to do what you want him to do through his own inclinations. Now it means what? The teacher has a certain vision. Now it's a very important point. If you don't have a vision, then all teaching is beside the point. Now this also is a very controversial subject. A teacher should be a teacher by virtue of what? Now, in our modesty, we say that we are also like children. So we are also students, moving with students. It's a very modest way of saying it and good way of it. It counterbalances the exaggerated notion of a teacher, where teacher normally feels that he is all-knowing. And he knows what is to be done, and he knows how it is to be done, and so on. So in contrast to that view, this is a very good view, and every teacher should have this feeling. But at the same time, this also is a great truth. You are a teacher by virtue of what? By virtue of the fact that you are at least two steps ahead of your children. At least this much. As mother told one teacher of French, he knew no French at all, and mother said, now you teach French in the school. And he said to the mother, but I don't know French at all. So mother said, I know that you don't know French. So mother said, every day you learn new words yourself. So you'll be ahead of your children. And give that knowledge to your children next day. And then every day you go on, and then ultimately within 2 years he became one of the best teachers of French. But in any case, the important point I want to make is that a teacher is one who is at least two steps ahead of the child. In fact, in Sri Aurobindo's words, a teacher is one who is able to uplift the enthusiasm of the child. This is the minimum definition of a teacher. A teacher is one who is able to uplift the enthusiasm of the child. Whatever enthusiasm the child has got is not enough. There is a role of a teacher. And the role of a teacher is that whatever enthusiasm the child possesses, he should be able to uplift it. Now, by whatever means, very often you find that many good mothers, in knowledge terms, they may not be very learned, but they become great inspirers of their children. Even the learned sons of good mothers, they derive as inspiration from their mothers. Shivaji was a great conqueror, great administrator, but his inspiration was from his mother. Now, this is because this is the power of the teacher. He should have the power to lift the enthusiasm of the child. By whatever means, it may be because of the character that one possesses, great fire of aspiration, great knowledge that he or she might possess, or whatever. This is what, in terms of Rousseau, he says, taking the hand of the pupil in your hand, that is the mark of a teacher. You should be able to take the hand of the pupil in your hand, that is the mark. So the minimum thing that a teacher should possess is this power. And this power comes from a certain kind of vision. So a teacher must have a vision, and that vision should be capable of lifting up the child. These are the two things that you should possess as a teacher. And then as a result of your vision, you should be constantly in search as to how that vision can be further developed, can further be enriched, can further be chiseled, sharpened, and can be so expressed that children can understand and can feel that to be a kind of a light, in the light of which the child can progress. Now, this is the background against which I personally would like to make a few statements. But this is just a background. That is to say, I don't take the view, there is a view, should there be structure of education or no structure of education? It's a question which Sanjeev very often has discussed with me. Now, there is an extreme view, there should be no structure at all. And I said in ashram at one time, they said, no lectures, no curriculum, no examinations. It would be a kind of an argument against all structures. But the moment the teacher has a vision and a guideline, already some kind of a structure has come into existence. The only question is, the structure should be such it does not imprison anybody. And this is a very difficult problem. How to have a structure which is not a structure? It is similar to the question which my mother asked at the highest level of her experimentation with the body, where she felt that the human body has a skeleton, and this skeleton is an obstruction to the development of the supramentalization of the body. Because a skeleton is a rigid skeleton. So actually mother was asking the question, how to make the body so supple, so very subtle, that this skeleton's rigidity would be broken. And yet the individual may be able to stand up. In fact, there is a beautiful conversation between Satprem and the mother on this subject. And she says that, Satprem says, a small child, for example, his skeleton is not rigid. So mother says, yes, but the child cannot walk. I mean, if you break the structure of the skeleton and the force of the skeleton, then this is the problem. And I think this is the basic problem also of education. You should have a structure and no structure. So, such a structure that it is not serving as a structure. And this is a very difficult problem. That's why I said education is a very difficult process, because basically a true education is one in which you neither hammer nor you allow the child to go wayward and haywire. This is the contrast, the two conflicting tendencies, and we have to bring them into harmony. So in a debate in education, I feel that I cannot take part in a debate because I am neither here nor there. And I believe that both should be there, but somehow should be synthesized. But synthesized by what? And that is alchemy. And I personally believe that that alchemy is still not known. We have to, this is the field, Auroville is a field where we have to make an experiment. Now, having given this background, I put the following questions. I think we all agree that we are here to give a concrete shape to Mother's dream. I take it is an incontrovertible statement, and we study Mother's dream again and again, and we want to realize this dream as faithfully as we can. I think if you can bring a chair from outside, you bring a chair from outside, huh? Now, Mother's dream is very clear, where she says there should be a place on the earth where students do not study to pass examinations and to obtain certificates. These words are absolutely clear and categorical. She has also added that students should study to develop their faculties and to study the secrets of the world. These two very important words she has given. Not to pass examinations and obtain certificates, but at the same time to develop faculties and also to learn the secrets of the world. Now both these propositions have to be read together. Now developing faculties very often involves passing examinations. You need to pass tests. Certain faculties can be developed when they receive a test. So, mother is not opposed to passing examinations. or to face examination. Very often, people therefore misunderstand, say, mother is opposed to examinations, which is not true. Passing examination is a motive of study, that is what is not wanted by the mother. You study to pass examination, that is not what mother wants. It doesn't mean that you should not have examinations, you should not pass the examinations. That is not the correct meaning of it. Development of faculties itself requires passing tests. And we knew, for example, even for sports, mother herself used to measure with tape how much a student has been able to jump, how fast he has been able to run. And there were hurdles in the tests of their sports. So it is not that mother was opposed to tests. On the contrary, mother wrote to me once, tests are and will be. Tests are and will be. But, and this but is very important, a silly mechanical mind passing an examination and that with flying colors is an indictment on the examination system. What kind of examination do you want to give to child? If the child is to pass an examination which he can pass even with a silly mind, then such examinations are out of the court. Now most of the examinations of the world are like that, and that is the whole problem. By memorizing, by mugging up, you can pass an examination. And that will be flying colors. And after examination, you forget everything that you have learned. For 5 days, you learn at the last moment, mug up, vomit out, and you pass an examination. It is this kind of examination that is out of the court, whether here or there or anywhere. Then she said, examinations should not be uniform. The same examination for everyone. The examination should be adapted to each child and his progress. Examination should come to a child at a time when he is ready for it. Now these are all the qualifications that mother has made when she said tests are and will be. And you can say there is no rigid stand, there should examinations are to be encouraged or not encouraged. It's a very subtle process in which examinations have to come in the process of education. But the most important thing is that you are developing faculties of the children. And that is an important point. Ultimately, whatever you do should ultimately develop the faculties. And this is a very vast subject. What are the faculties? And I'll come to this a little later. Second aspect is, the student should study to find the secrets of the world. Now this is another aspect. What are the secrets of the world? And if you study the Sri Aurobindo's and mother's exposition of the world and the secrets of the world, you find that they put before us the secrets of matter, life, mind, and of the worlds which are beyond the mind and behind the mind. The universe behind the universe, or universes behind the universe. In the Kathopanishad, there is a beautiful sentence, one who thinks that this world alone is, will always go round and round in misery. It's a very beautiful sentence. One who knows that this world alone is, goes round and round in misery. So secrets of the world would mean what? That this world alone is not. That there are worlds behind worlds and universes behind universe. Now this is the meaning of what mother says, to learn the secrets of the world. Now when we come to the subject of the matter of secrets of the world, we come to the what is a very important educationally, and that is what is called subjects of study. This is what normally is called in our whole syllabus, as curricula, wherever you go, we always ask, what subjects are you studying? And this brings us to one of the most important issues of education. Traditionally in India and elsewhere, during the last 500 years, we are all accustomed to a system of subjects. The idea of faculties has gone into the background. We don't ask the question, what are the faculties we have to develop? Not that development of faculties is denied by anybody, no. But it is expected that through the study of subjects, faculties will develop. We are not making a scientific study as to whether this is a true statement. There is no doubt that by studying some subjects, some faculties do develop. But we are not asking whether all the faculties that are needed to be developed are developed or not. And what subjects will develop, what kind of faculties, and in what way will you study a subject by developing what faculties. We do not explain this or don't undertake this study. And that is one of the important problems that we have to face in our development of education here. Now, we have at present in our system of education all over the world a scheme. In India, this was the scheme which was given to us by Macaulay. He wiped out our Indian system of education at one stroke and introduced a system of education which was becoming very prominent in the West in the form of subjects. Education means you study a few subjects. And the scheme is basically study English, mathematics, physics, chemistry, history, geography. All the rest is extracurricular. Art, music, drama. You can do many other good things. Debate, elocution, dance, drama, everything is extracurricular. But this is curricular. Physical education also extracurricular. So you can see that the whole system of education has been reduced all over the world only to basically 5-6 subjects. And education means how much English you have studied, how much history do you know, how mathematics you have learned. And all the debates in the world on education is centering around this fundamental scheme. Then some progressive teachers come and say, no, this, I will teach mathematics in a different manner. And he becomes a wonderful educationist. He will say, oh, history, geography should not be taught in the way in which you are teaching now. You should teach them as social sciences. So don't teach history, geography, teach social sciences. Innovations of this kind are all the time going on in the world. And this is what is called making education better. And once mother told us, we are not here to make education better than what it is elsewhere. We are here to do something that is not even conceived elsewhere. And that is our task. What is it that is not conceived? What is it that is not conceived elsewhere at all as a part of education? That is what we want to do. Now I come back therefore to two important points, faculties and subjects. On both the points, these are the two important parts of educational process. Development of faculties and development of the knowledge that is contained in different subjects. Or development of knowledge which is not even in subjects which we count. There is a kind of knowledge which escapes all the books. Now, as far as faculties are concerned, let us take faculties of the body, faculties of life force, the faculties of the mind, the faculties of the psychic consciousness, the faculties of the ethical being, the faculties of the aesthetic being, the capacities of intuition, of revelation, of discrimination, of inspiration, the faculties of comprehension, the faculties by which you go into transcendental consciousness. Now these are the number of faculties which are before us. Now in our education system, we have made, because of the subjects, a selection of faculties. Largely we teach our children the faculties of memory, the faculties of reasoning, and the faculties of imitation. These are the three important faculties that we develop among our children. And that too in a very perfunctory manner. Incidentally, because main thing is subjects. But incidentally, whatever happens, we teach these three faculties. Faculty of memory, faculty of reasoning, and faculty of imitation. Imitation is not a wrong faculty, it's a good faculty. But we teach these three faculties out of all other faculties. We have no special study of aesthetic faculties, ethical faculties, intuitive faculties, of inspirational faculties, discrimination faculties. We don't have any other process by which the mind can be silenced, the faculty of silencing the mind, the faculty of what is called development of states of consciousness. There are a number of states of consciousness which we don't develop at all. Aristotle spoke of habits, but habit, he used the word in a very large and very enlightened sense. He said education is an education of habits. And what did he mean? It is actually development of states of consciousness. Now in the present system of education, this idea of states of consciousness is completely evaporated. It doesn't exist. There are many states of consciousness which require years of training. So at the right moment, the right emotion will arise in you. Yes.
Anything what you just say seems that school is supposed to develop everything. That in education school is only one part. Friends, family, social development is our also part of education. And we are doing anything inside school, all schools have to develop some of the faculties and the rest was to develop the other one. It's to not answer every needs of a child.
This is a problem we have to discuss. I'm only stating what are the faculties. How much you can do, what you should do. I'm coming next to this question. As you rightly said, the school, as we understand, is a part of the totality. And school gives you only a selection, or ought to give a selection. The rest, the whole life is there. In fact, I started when you were not here by defining education where life itself is a teacher of life. So not only school, but the whole totality of life is a teaching institution basically. But I'll come back again to what you are saying. Now, states of consciousness require a lot of development. I require, for example, to control my passion when I see somebody whose face I don't like. Now, as an educated person, I should be able to control myself. This is called education. If I start charging against somebody whose face I don't like, it means I'm a barbarian. I'm not educated. Now, how do I arrive at a point of self-control when somebody whom I see and immediately I feel like charged? Now, to develop that self-control at the right moment, I have to do self-control even when that face is not before me. A number of times I have to control, even while thinking of him, I have to control myself. Then, if I have controlled 100 times, then at that right moment, I may be able to control. In recent times, for example, I am talking freely with you, in recent times, AIDS has become a great disease in the world. And there are many kinds of prescriptions which are being given as to how to prevent AIDS. And now it is understood that no preventive measures of AIDS are effective unless people are able to control the impulse of enjoyment at that right moment. You may do anything, have any kind of means or aid, all kinds of preventive measures. But if at that moment, exciting moment, if you cannot control yourself, all your measures are gone. Therefore, it is now being felt that self-control is a state of consciousness which is developed over years. It's only when you have done for years and years this kind of a self-control over the desire to enjoy that you can, at the right moment, you can possibly control yourself. This is only an extreme example I am giving to show the importance of the development of states of consciousness. Somebody has made a mistake. Christ taught us, for example, forgive them as the divine forgives you. Just as you trespass and divine forgives you, he has trespassed, you forgive him. Now this sense of forgiveness, how will you really develop forgiveness? It's a state of consciousness. It's not knowledge, it's a state of consciousness. How will you develop compassion, kindness, benevolence, generosity? Tremendous list, you may have a long list of states of consciousness which require to be developed. Now, in our educational system as it is present in the world, these states of consciousness have no place. They develop pell-mell among human beings, all of us. In fact, in that sense, all of us are uneducated. If education was rightly given to us right from childhood, then we would be much better human beings than what we are. And this is an education in which we have not participated. Therefore, when we think that we are educationists, we do not take into account this aspect at all. When we begin to advise education as to what should be education, since we have not been educated in this aspect, we never take into account this aspect to be introduced in the educational system. So there is a number of faculties, there are many states of consciousness. And there are many other faculties of which I hardly speak. For example, the faculty of developing physical stamina. Now, it's a fact that as a child, I always used to shudder to go into swimming pool. Like most of the children, when you say that now you go to swimming and you try to push the child shucks. He doesn't want to be pushed. Then somehow you push him and then ultimately begins to learn swimming. Now there was nobody to tell me that you don't be afraid, you just go and you will see, you fall into the waters and your body itself will react and will be able to swim. It took me a long time before I could start swimming. So I had no practice of swimming. As a result, I found that when I learned swimming, I had no sufficient stamina to swim at length. Now this is one of the examples I am giving you myself of my own inadequacy. That even if I know swimming now, if I'm now thrown into the water, I'll immediately drown after some time because I have no stamina to swim for a long time. Now many people don't understand this, but I understand it very well. That I was not educated properly, my education was so inadequate, so wrong, that this capacity to develop my stamina was never given. And therefore, I am a very poor specimen of humanity, one who cannot have the stamina to swim. And many other staminas, I mean, supposing suffering of cold and heat is also a faculty. And it's also a human faculty which must be developed. Similarly, various kinds of courage that you have, Sri Aurobindo has spoken in the perfection of the body, the hardihood of the body, and the kind of experience that comes under a tremendous stress of adventure. When you are on the top of the hill and you have no oxygen and yet you have to breathe, and how does your body immediately come out of the breath, is also a great capacity. There are many, many faculties of which we do not normally take into account at all. Now, when Mother says that education should be for the development of faculties, we normally understand only in a very limited sense this word, because we are aware only of memory, reasoning and imitation. So, Mother says that you should develop these three faculties and don't worry about other things. It's not true. Mother wants all the human faculties to be developed. And now you can understand there are many faculties. Even if you develop, there are no examinations for them. You cannot have examinations at all. There are many faculties for which there are no exams. Or exam comes only once in a lifetime. When shall I examine whether I have got self-control or not? It may come only once in a lifetime, that examination. So if all education is for passing examinations, there are certain things which you will never develop because they cannot be examined. And that is the reason why Mother says education must not be for passing examinations, but for development of faculties. Now, on the other side, now let us come to the subjects. As I said, at present our limited view of subjects is confined to 5 or 6 subjects. And we try to do our best even in these 5 or 6 subjects. Now the domains are so vast. Yesterday I was seeing what Shali gave me, the GCE examination, this whole book, and also the brochure. And last night and today morning I have been studying this, and I feel that if our students can pass these examinations, it will be wonderful. I mean, the examination papers which are given here, if our children have capacity to pass these examinations, it will be wonderful. But that is not enough. The conclusion that I came to is, it's not enough. This, of course, but much more. And if you have only this syllabus to be passed, then you will never be able to develop children for other things which are much more important. So if my conclusion was somewhat negative, not negative fully, somewhat negative is because of this reason. That's fine. To pass this kind of an examination, you require a crash program of studies of a certain kind, in which your faculty developments are crushed. And you have to drill yourself on a particular line of development, which is good. But the results are extremely limited. It is like Hatha Yogi. He also develops tremendous capacities of the body by doing exercises again and again. But he can't be a Jnana Yogi at the same time. He can't do Karma Yoga at the same time. He can't do Bhakti Yoga at the same time. And much of the time will be lost only on Hatha Yogic exercises, 30, 40 years. And then when the time comes when you have to apply Karma Yoga, you will be failure. So our education is of this type. We take a lot of time to study a few subjects and attain to a certain kind of an achievement. As a result, all of us are so lopsided that in the test of life we fail. We do not know how to relate ourselves with people. We don't have the right states of consciousness. We don't, as Mother said, you should have the capacity to be silent when you want to be silent. When you want to have knowledge, you should be able to get the knowledge when you want it. These are the capacities which you don't develop at all. Now, in regard to subjects of studies, I have been thinking a great deal as to what should be the subjects of studies. What are the subjects of studies? Now, there are many subjects of studies which are called subjects of specialization. If I want to be a doctor, medical doctor, I study a number of subjects. If I want to be a lawyer, I study some other subjects. If I want to be an accountant, I study some other subjects. If I want to be a pilot, I study some other subjects. There are numerous subjects in the world today, numerous subjects, and these subjects are multiplying tremendously. Therefore, educationists have come to the conclusion that professional studies later on, you concentrate upon what is essential. And what is essential is a very difficult subject to decide. But as I said, now it has been understood, if you learn languages, it is essential. If you learn mathematics, basically, not all fine mathematics, because there are various kinds of mathematics to be learned. If you want to be a pilot, some kind of mathematics has to be learned. If you want to be a physicist, another kind of mathematics has to be learned, and so on. But some mathematics you should learn as a basic equipment. Some physics, some chemistry, some biology, and some history geography. I mean, it is suggested that these are essential subjects which everybody should participate and study. Now, I am not opposing this view, but I am opposing it in a certain direction. Is it really true that these are the most essential subjects of study? There are essential subjects. Is this sufficient? Is it all that we should develop? Is there some other kind of a scheme possible? Now we know, for example, that for a long time in universities like Cambridge and Oxford, there used to be a course of classics. You study only three languages, like Greek, Latin, and English, and study the classical literature of these three, along with the history of classics. And it used to be said that this is a wonderful education. All that you need is contained here. You may not need physics, chemistry, biology. You don't need to learn anatomy, physiology, nothing. Classics. There are people who today believe that if you study only Shakespeare, your education is complete. Or they go even to some, you study only King Lear. Study King Lear and your education is very greatly completed. Or what essentially is learned. Now, in Plato's academy, when he started academy, he put down one very important statement. One who knows no mathematics need not enter here. That was the motto which he had put down on his academy. One who does not know mathematics need not enter here. He gave importance to mathematics so much that he felt that if you don't know mathematics, you can't learn philosophy. Because his main subject of study in his academy was philosophy. So he thought that you cannot learn philosophy unless you know mathematics in a very great detail. So according to his scheme of education, mathematics and philosophy were the most important subjects of study. Now today in our system of education, this importance is not given. Philosophy is knocked out completely. And mathematics is done in a very perfunctory manner. Except when you take mathematics A level, which I saw the papers for, very, very high mathematics. Even at the A level, it is not a high mathematics of graduation or undergraduate section. But it is a mathematics which is very high level, even at the A level. But that is if you want to specialize in mathematics ultimately. Now I know that the mother used to give a great importance to mathematics in our ashram school. great importance to mathematics, because herself she was a mathematician, and she gave a great importance. Manoj, for example, has been taught mathematics by the mother herself. Even at the time of darshan, of distribution of flowers, if Manoj used to go with his notebook, mother would stop all the pranams and all that at that time, but would solve the problem of Manoj at that time. So this was the privilege of mathematics. Pavitrada himself, he was the director of education, and he was one of the top mathematicians. So, mother gave a great importance to the study of mathematics, sciences, and so on. Now, in an Indian system of education, if you examine what are the subjects which you have taught in Indian system, we have a Taittiriya Upanishad. One of the Upanishads is called Taittiriya Upanishad, where some kind of a glimpse is available as to what kind of education was given, what were the subjects which were covered. In Chandogya Upanishad also, there is a list of subjects which Narada, as a pupil, knew when he came to his teacher. When Narada came to his teacher, the teacher asked him, "How much do you know?" So he gives a list of subjects, physics, chemistry, astronomy, and knowledge of serpents, the knowledge of skies and of nakshatras, and so many sciences, 15, 16 subjects he gives, a list of them. Then he says that the teacher says, "What do you want to know and why do you want to know further?" So he says, "I know all these subjects, but I am gripped with sorrow." That is to say, these subjects have no answer as to how to overcome sorrow. So all these subjects are beside the point, and human beings are full of sorrow. And if education is to prepare children to overcome the state of sorrow, then some other education is necessary. And that is why the teacher said to Narada, "What you know is only words." That is the starting point of the education which Narada was given by his teacher Sanat Kumar. What you know is only words, but knowledge is beyond words. And then he expounds what is the true knowledge. Now, in Indian system of education, the first thing that was taught was pronunciation. A very important starting point, because psychologically every child wants to utter words and sounds. So, pronunciation was given the first starting point in the educational system of India. Every child was initiated into pronunciation and recitation. And for a number of years, you just pronounce and pronounce correctly, because it was said that if you don't pronounce correctly, your life will be ruined at a very important moment. There is an example given in one of the Brahmanas, that a certain Rakshasa, the vital superman of his time, wanted to kill Indra. And he was given a kind of a mantra by his teacher. And he said that you kill, it meant let Indra be killed by power of my mantra. This was the basic formula. Now in Sanskrit the words can be so organized, and if you make a mistake in it and if you pronounce it wrongly, and this Rakshasa came to pronounce it wrongly, and it meant, let me be killed by Indra. And he was killed. I mean, this was just to emphasize the necessity of correct pronunciation. That if you don't pronounce correctly, at a given time in life, it may be ruinous to you. So you should be able to pronounce the words very, very correctly. And that was a great prize place given in the Indian system of education to pronounce correctly. Even today we find that when you go to IAS examination interview and if you can't pronounce properly, you are checked out. You may have good knowledge, but if you can't pronounce properly, you are checked out. Your pronunciation must be perfect. So, and then thereafter, there are a number of subjects which have to be studied, in which you learn the universe and something that is beyond the universe. Because as I said, Chandogya Upanishad said that if you know that this world alone is, you turn into misery round and round. You have to learn that there are many other universes. So this education consisted of many things, including the knowledge of the universe and that which is beyond the universe. That was a part of educational system of India. This education system also included study of dharma, dharma of shastra, lot of science, mathematics, physics, biology, chemistry, Ayurveda. The whole science of anatomy, physiology and healing. And a study of the meaning of life. And the study of yoga. In addition to the study of poetry, the 64 sciences and arts. For every woman, for example, 64 arts was a compulsory thing. 64 arts. Including how to decorate your bed. It was also part of education. How to decorate a bed. How to serve food to your guests is also a kind of an art, which was also to be taught to the children, to the young women. And there are many other subjects. As a result, it was said that a student of India was so developed. 32 great qualities always reigned over the consciousness of Indian students. 32 states of consciousness. 32 lakshan, 32 characteristics of consciousness reigned over the Indian students. Sri Aurobindo, while writing on his Brain of India, he says, how is it that India could produce a writer like Vyasa? If you read Vyasa, there is not a single domain of life on which he does not have scientific knowledge. Scientific knowledge, not only knowledge, scientific knowledge. Of which Bhagavad Gita is only one yoga shastra, only one yogic science is only one Bhagavad Gita. But when Bhishma gives knowledge to Yudhishthira, he gives the knowledge of political science. And the full science, it is not only politics, how it is played, but political science was taught. And if you study Mahabharata fully, you will have so many scientific treatises, as it were, in the Mahabharata. So Sri Aurobindo says, how was it possible for India to produce one Vyasa? Because Sri Aurobindo's statement is that to produce one climax, you should produce hundreds and millions of approximates. Before you reach a climax, you should have hundreds and millions of approximates. Then only you can reach, one of them will be reaching the climax. So, this would mean that, actually speaking, our present selection of subjects is extremely poor. And we need to examine this aspect very deeply. In our present circumstances, these subjects which we are teaching are good. And we find that their efficacy is proved. There is no question about it. But what place these subjects has to be given? The totality of other subjects which are also necessary. And how to organize it? And what time will you allocate to all these subjects? These are very important, difficult subjects. Now, it is for that reason I say that I am here as a student with all of us to make an inquiry into this. And I want to present to you some of the ideas that are developing in me, which can be of some help to all of us. I believe that our education here has to develop a curriculum. And curriculum naturally refers to subjects. But our curriculum will also take into account the need to develop faculties and states of consciousness. Our curriculum may not be merely subject-oriented. It has to combine all the three, subjects, faculties, and states of consciousness. Now, there is of course a view, of which I spoke to you earlier, that education should be so free that there should be no curriculum because it binds. It becomes a rigid framework and a student is cast into a curriculum and his freedom of to swim freely is lost. And I would like immediately to accept this fact. The truth behind this argument is to be accepted immediately. It is true that a curriculum has this deadening effect. Therefore, a curriculum should be such that is not a curriculum. That is to say, a curriculum of such a nature is so flexible that it does not prevent a teacher or a pupil to develop a curriculum according to the need of the moment. I give an example. I was teaching history at a given time in the ashram school. And a student came to me and said, I want to learn the history of weapons. It was his great wish to study history of weapons. Now I was absolutely incompetent to deal with this subject. But nobody in the school either knew how to answer this question. So I began to study myself, the history of weapons, catapults, up to aeroplanes, and up to atom bomb. I studied the whole subject afterwards. And I prepared a number of worksheets for the children, for one child, which I, at least for me, for my education, was very good. Now, if there was only one curriculum, having no freedom, then this child would have never come to this question, and I would have never answered him. And I would have been a poorer specimen than what I am now. And as a result, I was benefited by this kind of development. Now, I believe that even if you have a curriculum, please do not suppress this possibility of freedom to develop evolutionary syllabi. Syllabi which evolve according to the needs. For example, similarly, one student came and said, I want to learn the story of history of costumes. Now, this is another challenge. You know, when you give freedom to the children to study, they come up with questions which are very interesting. One child, for example, came and said, I want to learn what is below the ocean. Not in the ocean. Below the ocean. What is below the ocean? How deep do you go? Now, similarly, when you allow children to ask questions, many philosophical questions are raised. And very often, these philosophical questions are brushed aside. Or we say, your home will teach you, your father will teach you, mother will teach you. It's not in the school, not in the curriculum here. Questions of Dharma Shastra are raised, not in the form of Dharma Shastra. This is right or wrong. Many questions of dilemmas of human life are, even in child's life, they come up very often. This child has beaten me, now what shall I do? Shall I plot to beat him again at a given time? And some children advise that, yes, now you should take revenge because this child has beaten you. Now it raises many, even at the childhood this question arises, shall I reply? He has insulted me, then I will also insult him. I'll teach a lesson to him. Should a child teach a lesson to his friend, even though he has become enemy now? Now these are very important questions which children do have, and we don't normally deal with these questions importantly. Like modern politicians about whom Sri Aurobindo says, important matters come before him, but great matters come before him, but he does not deal with him greatly. So similarly, many important questions come up before the teachers, but we do not deal with them importantly. We put them aside and say, well, sometimes we give little advice this way, little advice that way, and we say, pell mell, everything is melted away in due course of time. So considering all this, I was thinking that we should have three wings or three aspects of a curriculum as an experimental basis. Now, I have derived these three aspects from what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have written, not for a curriculum, but in many other contexts, and I have tried to digest as it were. When you open the book of the Mother called Education, the first chapter is called Science of Living. And the subtitle is To Know Oneself and to Control Oneself. Now, I have studied this chapter again and again to understand what is the message contained in this chapter. Why Mother, while starting the whole book on education, focuses upon this very important subject, science of living. I derive three conclusions from it. One is, according to the Mother, all education is to teach human beings as to what is life. Because that is the most important subject, because we are all human beings in process of living. What is life is the most important subject. A subject which is at all at present not recognized at all. And besides Mother's second conclusion is that Mother speaks of the science of living. And that is also very important. That is to say, living has what is life and how life is to be studied scientifically. At present, even those people who speak of life, they do not have science of living. People speak of art of living. But I have noticed the Mother doesn't speak of the art of life. She speaks of science of life, science of living, not of life but of living. Only for this, to know oneself and to control oneself. And over certain years in Auroville itself, we have tried to study this problem among so many of us here. And we have made a curriculum, it's a tentative curriculum. I don't know if all the members have got a copy of it or not. I had one copy sent to Mary. You have received a copy, no? We have some copies here, and perhaps at the end, if you want, it has been produced under the title of our own Center of Institution of Educational Research. Now, this is a research work, you might say. I do not say this is what Mother has said or Sri Aurobindo has said. This is a development, an attempt. Therefore, one can criticize it fully and thoroughly, because this is only an attempt to visualize a kind of a curriculum over first 12 years, from class 1 to class 12, how certain aspects or certain subjects, not taught as subjects, but as elements in self-knowledge and in the power to control oneself. I would suggest that this curriculum may be studied by all of us critically, so that it can be enriched, modified, torn away and replaced by something else. But we need to study this subject thoroughly well. You might say that what Mother says, when Mother says, this is a subject which cannot be for examination in a certain way. So if our education is for passing examinations, then this subject will be out. Our curriculum will not accept this subject at all. It can't be examined. But this I consider to be the most important subject to be studied. How to study, what methods to be developed is a different question which I'll come to later on, but not now. I am only proposing that in this curriculum, the central part of curriculum should be given to this, to know oneself and to control oneself. Now this curriculum I have so devised that it integrates three important points. It integrates basically the knowledge of psychology as a central piece, because know oneself is psychology basically. So it is psychology is the basic point. It is integrated with philosophy on one hand, science on the other hand, and aesthetics on the third hand. Ethics, aesthetics, philosophy, and science. These are all integrated with the basic fulcrum of psychology. So basically you teach psychology, philosophy, ethics, aesthetics, and science in their essentials. So the child who learns this curriculum will have a very good, I don't say mastery, but a very good acquaintance with these subjects. But not merely in the terms of subjects, but in the terms of the faculties which these subjects normally develop. Ethical faculty, aesthetic faculty, scientific faculty, philosophic faculty, and the tapasya that is needed to understand oneself, not merely in a theoretical manner, but by practicing. This is a curriculum which emphasizes learning by practicing. This is the one aspect of education that is not sufficiently emphasized in our present syllabi in the world. At the most we do learning by doing, but learning by practicing has a different dimension. As Yudhishthira, for example, was told, it's a story, it's a legend you might say, his teacher told him in the first class, tell the truth. And next day all the children were asked, tell me what I taught you yesterday. And everybody said, you told us, tell the truth. And Yudhishthira was the only one who did not answer the question. So he said, why do you not answer the question? He said, I have not practiced it. Unless I have practiced, how can I say that I know what you taught me yesterday? It's a very small example, but very interesting, very insightful example. You do not learn anything unless you practice it. Now, normally in our school education, practicing is hardly given a place. Excepting when you practice basketball or cricket or football, their practice is allowed. But in the other subjects, practicing hardly plays a role. And yet, practicing is a very important part of learning. So this is the explanation that I gave immediately of this curriculum that I have framed. I shouldn't say that I have framed, but it is a result of a number of people who have joined together and we have produced this. And then for about 10-12 years I have reflected on it and continuously modified it to some extent. Now, there is another insight that Sri Aurobindo has given in his book on education, National System of Education, where he speaks of the right-hand faculties and left-hand faculties. Now, what are the right-hand faculties and what are the left-hand faculties? The right-hand faculties, Sri Aurobindo says, consist of judgment, understanding, comprehension, and all that becomes creative. This is all right-hand faculties. Left-hand faculties analyze and they allow specialization. They go into details. Left-hand faculties concentrate upon the processes. Right-hand faculties emphasize essence. Not the process, but the essence. Now, corresponding to these, Mother had once said that in education, two tendencies must be synthesized. The scientific tendency and aesthetic tendency. Now, these words correspond to right-hand faculties and left-hand faculties. Synthesis of scientific is left-hand faculties. And creative, aesthetic is right-hand faculties. Now, if you combine aesthetic and the scientific, a very beautiful combination and composition of human nature evolves out of it. Now, based upon this, and if I want to use the word, use the subjects as terms for designating this, I would say that you should have a curriculum which includes the study of history, the study of classics, the study of music, art and poetry. This would be a syllabus of the right-hand faculties. On the left-hand faculties, the syllabus would consist of languages, mathematics, astronomy, geography, mathematics, anatomy, physiology, hygiene, physics, chemistry, biology, number of subjects. They are all very good in developing the left-hand faculties. Now, if I now speak of these in terms of faculties, not in such a terms of subjects, but faculties, then I would say that our whole curriculum should be so designed that emphasis falls not merely on subjects, but also on development of faculties. And this should be done at all the levels, but particularly in what Mother has called after-school level. That is to say, when Mother speaks of after-school 1, after-school 2, after-school 3, I find that these three stages of education are extremely important for emphasizing not subjects as such, but faculties. In the beginning, in the what Mother has called last school, that is the first levels of education, first 8 years, let us say, should be devoted to the study of languages, pronunciation, how to pronounce words in different languages.
Language, a faculty or a subject?
Subject. As I said, in the first state, you teach subjects mainly. The emphasis on subjects. Later on, at after school level, you emphasize faculties. I must tell you, these are all mental ideas. And I would not like to say that this is something which I would propose or prescribe. This I'm only suggesting as a research work. But to start a research, I am only proposing the first rough draft, brouillon. A kind of a statement so that it can be dealt with properly. But what I suggest is that in the beginning, in the last school, what Mother called a last school, would be concentrated upon a few subjects. In after school, you develop faculties, especially through subjects, but also specially exercises, for example, of reasoning, exercises of memory, exercises of pronunciation, exercise of discovery, exercise of invention, different faculties that we have. They can be developed in special methods of exercises. In super school, you combine the two together, synthesize. subjects and faculties in a very high manner. And when this is developed, then you come to no school, and then you are free to develop whatever you like to do. You want to be an athlete, then you specialize in your own way, but by your own processes. If you want to be a great surgeon or a doctor, you can develop that. You want to be a great architect, you develop architecture on your own, etc., etc. But then it is left to you. You have now got everything that a school or education can give you. All the rest is for the life to develop for you. And as mother said, all that, when somebody wrote a letter, I give you the example, an anecdote. A teacher wrote a letter to the mother saying that the new method of education that we have now in our school and our higher education is such that the quantity of studies will be very small. And as a result, our students will be very poor as far as the quantity of studies is concerned. Outside world has so many subjects, whereas our students will have only a few subjects because we are emphasizing too much on understanding, the faculty of understanding. So mother wrote in answer, higher course is meant to develop the faculty of understanding if they can. The rest can be studied all throughout the life. Now, in my own personal life, this was a great revelation by the mother, because there is a great pressure usually in our school education or our college education to stuff a number of subjects. And then the whole load becomes so great that children cannot bear, even higher students also do not bear that burden. It's a tremendous burden of education. So mother simplified by saying that even in higher education, the important part is to make children understand and to make them intelligent if they can. All the rest can be studied throughout the whole life. So our curriculum should be such that it will give to the children a lot of programs for whole lifetime. That you still have to develop quite a lot, but now it is no school. You are on your own. So this is the framework that I was thinking of, that our curriculum that we need to develop is first for the first 8 levels, let us say class 1 to class 8. Then you develop class 8 to class 12, which I call after school. And then you develop what is called a curriculum for super school. And then a program for no school to be handled by students themselves in the way in which they like.
There's one important faculty which I, of course, had to deal with as a teacher of language, and that was something called the deep memory. And it's not just memorizing as you would for a test, but it's deep memory. So just as you don't think about English grammar as you're speaking to us there, from the deep memory, it's just there, it flows out. The pianist playing the piano doesn't concern what is this note and what does this finger do there. Shouldn't this be developed as a faculty immediately, even in first class? And certainly early in language, the question that you just asked, is language a subject or is it a faculty? I contend that it is more in the beginning a faculty than a subject.
Well, actually, mother has answered this question to me when I asked this question. She said, there are children, mother said, who are gifted with musical faculties. And she said, they need to practice a lot so that even their fingers have got automatically the knowledge that is required to put their fingers at the right point in the right piece. So mother gave a great importance to this capacity. And the children should be given such exercises. That is where subject versus faculty comes into sharpness. Very often this faculty is hardly developed. As you rightly said, that if you learn a language properly, then grammatical mistakes won't occur. When you speak, your language itself will be grammatical. Not that you apply grammar and then you speak.
Exactly.
The grammar will have been so much woven in your habit of speaking that you cannot utter something which is ungrammatical. Your own speech, your tongue will oppose you. It will not allow you to speak that is incorrect. This is a great faculty which has to be developed. I agree entirely. I mean, Mother herself spoke of it. In fact, if you study how to develop faculty, it's a big science by itself. When we speak of Piaget, for example, the modern thinker in education, what was his specialty? His specialty was faculties. Develop the faculties of the children. When Vivekananda said, you should have man-making education, and he was asked, what is man-making education? He said, man-making education is the development of the faculty of concentration. This is all. If you develop the faculty of concentration, all that you need comes as a result of it. The whole human personality is contained in the power of concentration. That was his definition. So this idea of faculty development is so important that I personally feel, as Auroville as a field of research, we should have a very important research into this field, how to develop various faculties. As I gave the example of stamina. How to develop stamina of the body is also a faculty. It requires exercise. And various kinds of exercises by which stamina can be developed. Many children in our ordinary world, when he can't do something, say, oh, don't do it, now I've finished, don't worry. We don't take the trouble, as in army, for example, a soldier who cannot run, he is given a capacity to run afterwards in 2 years' time. He comes up with a stamina of running afterwards. It's because there is a concentration of our faculties. Therefore, the whole army training is of a different kind. Army training is so good because of this reason. Yes, we can stop here now. Yes, sir.
Why don't we go into some detail and try to work out what would be the curriculum?
Let me state what I feel. But before that, I want to answer a question to Francois. The question that he had raised. You see, his question, you correct me if my question is correct, formulation is correct or not. I spoke of the need to develop faculties, need to develop a number of articles of information regarding number of subjects. And his argument was that school is only one of the instruments of education. There are many other instruments of education, like the home, like the society, the groups in which one moves. And the suggestion that he made was, do not arrogate to yourself as a school all the functions that belong to many others, because education is only a part of the totality. And don't arrogate to yourself all these responsibilities. Leave something to others also. And do not burden yourself with so much of problems and troubles which you are taking in analyzing this field of education. Is it a correct exposition of your question? Pardon? Best instrument of education. Now, I think that what he says is very true. And now with this new amendment that he has made, my answer becomes much easier. If it was only one of the instruments, I would have argued that it is not one of the instruments. Even if it is one, it is one of the very important instruments of education. And now he has said one of the best or the best. I am much more than satisfied. But the other aspect of which he spoke are also important. And my answer to that question is that actually Auroville has been conceived as a totality of a school. Auroville as a whole, not the school, not Lavanir, not the transition, not last school, not after school, the whole of Auroville is a totality. The home, the parents, the members of the society, architects and gardeners and electricians and cooks, all are teachers. And children are to plunge into the totality and they will all learn from there. And actually speaking, a good educationist would also prescribe a curriculum for the whole society. But a different kind of curriculum. I would say that actually in Auroville, the whole of Auroville should have a curriculum. And actually Mother has given that curriculum. The divine life, but not through mystic means, but through life itself, and no religions. I think this is the curriculum that Mother has given for the whole of Auroville. Charter of Auroville is also a curriculum of Auroville. Or you might say, quest for mutation of human species is the curriculum of Auroville, which you are not emphasizing sufficiently today, and that is why also there is a problem in Auroville. If this quest for the mutation of human species is broadly shared and intensely shared, then some of the problems of Auroville could be resolved very easily. And it is necessary to have this very broadly shared by people in Auroville. Is it all right, Francois? Have I answered your question? Yes? Yes. How to read that point? Yeah, that is true. But I'll now answer that question next time. Because in the meantime, another question has come up which I must address myself. Can we think of the first 8 years curriculum? The following are my ideas. I have already presented what I call the core curriculum for 12 years. So it includes 8 years also. So that is my first proposal. These 8 years course, which is here, let that be the spinal cord of our curriculum. Now I come to the first, the left wing. It consists of the study of languages. So my proposal is that we should have a curriculum of the study of English, French, Tamil, Sanskrit. This is my proposal. These four languages. Now, pedagogically, it is a very difficult problem. How to teach four languages to our students? At present, we have made some efforts. Our children speak English and Tamil. These two languages are more widespread than other languages. Now, Mother had spoken of French very prominently. And I always feel sorry when our children are not able to speak French. This is my personal regret, in fact, which I want to share with you because I would like to tell you my own story about French. You know, when you don't know a language, you have a prejudice against it. When I came to the ashram, I did not know French. And therefore, this effect that one has a prejudice against what you don't know and what you other people say you should learn, and there is a reluctance. It's a difficult task to learn a language. So for quite some time, I did not learn the language. And the fact was that French was a medium of instruction in the ashram school. And that gave me, and I was a registrar, And not knowing French, I had half the school out of my understanding, which was a very troublesome thing for me. As a registrar, you should know the whole school, everything that is going on in the school. But because I did not know French, half the school was out of my purview. So all the time there was a knocking on my door, as it were, learn French, learn French, learn French. And I wanted to learn French, but where is the time? My work was so heavy, 14 hours a day, and tremendous amount of work to be done, so many experiments going on, so much of correspondence going on, and then reports to the mother, and the mother's answers to be implemented, and expansion of the school taking place, construction work going on at the same time. And I had no kripa with me at that time to assist, as Sanjeev has got somebody to assist. I had none. So, where is the time for learning a language? I also wanted to learn Tamil because Tamil was spoken all over, and even now I have not learned Tamil in spite of so many years. Unpardonable thing. But it is in my program. My curriculum still includes Tamil. Anyway, many teachers in our ashram school had a prejudice against French. Because they also did not know, like me, French language. And they felt that French is being emphasized in our school because Pavitrada is a Frenchman who was the director of education. Because he is the director, therefore French is being imposed upon all of us. Why is a burden on, actually it's a burden on our educational process. And this view was expressed implicitly in whispers and sometimes often quite openly. Some of the teachers who were quite old teachers and very revered teachers, they also used to say that Pavitra, being a Frenchman, wants to impose French in our school. It was blunt like that. And naturally people like me who did not know French and who had reluctance to learn French, used to feel that there may be something in it. I am talking to you quite in a confessional mood. It's a fact. Now a time came when there was the question of introducing new mathematics. I think around 1960-61, there was a new wave in the world of new mathematics. And many books came out on this subject. And there was, since Pavitrada himself was also a mathematician, and mother gave herself a great importance to mathematics, teachers said that we should introduce new mathematics in our school. Mathematik modern. And many textbooks were bought. And there was one book in French, which was one of the best as a production, but very costly. And there was another book in English, not so beautifully produced, but content-wise the same, but very cheap in cost. So now the question was, which textbook to follow? That French textbook or this English book? In what book to follow? And the argument was, of all those who were advocating English as a medium of instruction, their argument was that if you want to buy a number of copies of mathematics for each student, which was the practice in the ashram school, in ashram school everybody was given a textbook by the school itself. So, the school had to buy a number of copies of mathematics textbook, and if so many textbooks had to be bought, the budget would be very high. So, it was suggested that it is better to buy cheap books so that cost is not high, and English textbook is as good almost as the French book. So, a question was put to the mother, Mother, here are two books, and please tell us which book we should introduce in our school as a text. And mother said, you leave the matter to me, I will think over it. And after 3 days, mother wrote, this French book is the best. That was her answer. This French book is the best. But you need not give the text to every child. Teachers must study this book and produce worksheets for every child. You see how synthetic answer. The cost is not so high if you buy only for teachers and not for pupils. But then she gave a homework for teachers, that you read the textbook and prepare worksheets for children. So teachers have to work on it and give worksheets to the children in French. Now this was mother's answers. Now this gave me a tremendous insight into what mother's, why she was emphasizing French. And then one student wrote a very clear question. Mother, you tell us yourself, what is the importance of French from your own point of view? Not because so many others are advocating French or because the director of education is French, but you yourself, what is your view? And I read out this letter to the mother, and mother said the following to me, which I want to share with you because I really want to emphasize the study of French in Auroville. And mother said the following. English language has brought into India vulgar commercialism. And this has to be combated so that the Indian spirit comes back to itself. French is the only language which can combat with English because it has in it the qualities of clarity, precision, robust intellectuality, and aristocracy of the spirit. I want these qualities to be superimposed upon whatever is given through English language in India. She didn't speak only of the ashram. She told me in India, so that the corrupting influence of English is counteracted effectively. And then she told me, I do not know how much you can do in this direction. This was her answer, and this gave me a complete knock in my consciousness. This was just preceded by another sentence of the mother I give you. I had requested the printing press that we should have mother's talks, which are being distributed among teachers and students, an equal number of copies in French and English, so that those who do not know French can also study mother's talks in English. So mother had written to me, those who want to read me should read me in French. And she underlined French in 3 times in French. So I would like to share with you that I would like to plead with everybody in Auroville, please attend to French. At present, it is being neglected greatly.
I don't think it's an issue at all.
No, this is not an issue.
The sense that normally it's persuaded.
No, I don't. I don't say that. What I'm saying is neglected. It's neglected. The actual fact is, I know. I have talked to a number of students here. You can kindly enlighten me if I'm wrong. But I can tell you that our students are able to speak English fluently, but hardly in French. A large number of students in English. If it is true, then this is the reason. What is it?
I think what has been done is that everybody learns that from the very beginning in the garden of Eden. And you can transition as well in French. But because they are learning often three languages, at least, if not four. Plus some of them have a mother tongue, which is different from either of these three or four. The actual speaking is English. That is, back in the ashram, there is a possible speaking of French. But that is not done there. So the actual speaking language of our town is English, common language. So children pick up English and can speak English easier. But they are all learning French. And maybe at a later age, that means by 13, 14. And in fact, some of those who go to the French school, lycée, in Pondicherry, they are considered to be very good in French. So although they are not speaking fluently French, their knowledge of French is not that bad. Am I right?
No, some of the people who are born from lycée are not quite speaking.
Yeah.
Also,
what I have said, is that correct?
About French?
Yeah, because you just, like what the girl was telling, so mostly the one that went to French lycée were French speaking natives. It happens that a few did manage, but it's very few who were rich, more and not, and see if I speak good words.
So then why don't you answer Kripa about his question that he has raised about more on your mind or more importance to French? What would you say to what's been raising that French needs more attention?
No. I
am. It's what you said to tell me, soothing me, but I still would like to put a question mark.
And that's why I asked also the people who are involved.
Yes. No, if for example, according to you, we are satisfied with what is being done about French, it will soothe me. Because I would say that there is a perception about the importance of French which mother has seen.
Right. I mean, that perception is shared.
But
maybe I can add something, because in the 15 years we received the kids when they're teenagers, there was a time when we were getting kids who were bilingual. So there was a time, even in Oroville, that even if you were not a native speaker, you could end up with a good standard of French also. Now, I think it's worth analyzing what has changed in our practice, that now it is not obvious that a child who is not a native speaker of French will not be bilingual. But that's a fact. That it is only French speakers who come out bilingual. If you are not a native speaker of French, you are not likely to be bilingual. So I would put that as a question. I don't think what Kiran Bhai is saying requires an answer straight away. There is an element of analysis required. What have we done in terms of our practice that has changed over time? Because it was possible 10 years ago to be bilingual at least. And certainly I would say that those kids who were bilingual, I'm not saying what their native background is, whether they're French or English, bilinguality created a sense of development, intellectual development, which is different if you only speak one language very well. So there is something that we've lost, which as a teacher I experienced when I first started. People are nodding here. Do you want to say something?
Right.
You agree? But can you clarify what I'm saying? I mean, in terms of what changed?
Changed.
No, that's what I'm saying we could analyze.
I can say what changed. I think it's not for her to say 10 years. I think it's much first of all. I had a spoken aspiration, it was spoken in French. Now I think the case, it has a sense.
I'm talking about when I started to teach. So it's only 15 years since I've been teaching. So I'm talking about the students
that are... second language, but it's not what you say as the language. But I cannot remember, as the feeling that it has been really steadily progressing over the year, and I cannot see 15 years back, I don't think that it was better as soon as...
Let's say Prakriti's group, Kripa, Atash, all of them. That's what...
Prakriti's, yes, but there were a lot of the native French people that they had in transition. They had first language English, first language French. You know, it was given at that standard.
The school was in French. The whole of Phuket was taught in French.
Was it also, had English first language.
So I'm saying
we've done it in the past.
You would like to say something?
You know, I have a word. There have been pathetic books of a school in French, in Canada, and then 6 months of the whole school in English, and 6 months of French.
The
began in 1 week. What happened? Which is it? The thing I love. Why not?
Yes, you wanted to say something.
So just talking that one of the reasons in the early days many of us ended up speaking French is because the community was speaking French. It was nothing to do with the school. The school, we had French classes, but I'm sure much less than there are now. But people were speaking French. So, during the day, you spoke French. So you were just discussing a little French. It's all sort of being in aspiration and you said just that French was spoken.
Yeah, you want to say something?
I've heard of research, again in Canada, and this happened in the Toronto area, which of course is primarily overwhelmingly English. And yet there were a group of people in graduate school who realized that Canada should be bilingual and they wanted very much to learn French. And it was found in this, I think, the University of Toronto, that the best thing to do was to take courses in French. Just take whatever you wanted, ask for the course, psychology, education, whatever it was, be taught in French. And that was far better than taking a French class, overwhelmingly better than taking a French class.
For example, my niece in Germany, two people going down in my school, 8 years old, finished art and sport in France.
That's right.
And I'm holding the back.
Anyway, this is a subject which requires study.
Languages, like science in French, math in French, some other language, according to what the teacher is good at, what is his good language. It was in his language.
No, regarding what Sandy was saying about the ashram, in fact, in the more recent, not your time, but in the more recent time, French is spoken only with certain teachers. Actually, what happens is certain teachers who teach French, even outside the class, you have to talk in French with them. So whether you're watching a movie or whatever, you know, sitting for lunch with them, you spoke in French because he insisted on speaking in French. So in the beginning, when we didn't know French, you mix language, English, French, and you make the effort. But then, because you like the teacher, you want to speak some, you know, you want to exchange something. So you had to make the effort to talk. Similarly with Sanskrit, there are teachers who kept talking even outside the class only in Sanskrit with you. So whether it was your birthday or something, you even went to give a sweet to him. He exchanged in Sanskrit. So you had to say something, and so you had to make the effort of speaking in Sanskrit. So maybe something like this.
Yes, François.
En classe, mais qui n'a pas l'usage en dehors, on n'aura jamais pensé à sa fille, on n'aura jamais de élèves motivés, passionnés, ou quoi que ce soit. Et il avait voulu speak French outside school in Portus, mise en meeting, development group, I don't know, anything like that. Then the French become a living language for the students. If you want, if you study only in school and there is no idea outside, it's like Latin or Spanish. Maybe we will have few of them who will be very happy to do it, but it won't be a communication language, so it's a best language.
I think you are right. Actually, when mother spoke of four languages for Auroville, I believe that she wanted four languages, living languages of Auroville, spoken and communication through these four languages. Yes.
Yes, the different ways. In all we use, we find in English and French and Tamil. But yes, we see the letters.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. Now we should have Sanskrit also.
Yeah. There's one other factor which I think is very important. Just like I can't go and learn to play the piano to save my life and he can become a concert pianist, there's talent. And there is talent with language. And there is no question about it there that 95% of all students are going to learn to some degree the language you are teaching them by whatever, you know, good means there. But perhaps only 10% of them are going to be really bilingual. If they're not, you know, in the native speaking situation, there is talent. So we have to be forgiving too, you know, a lot of mistakes, but that's okay also. You know, a perfect French is fine, a perfect English is fine, but very few of us are going to get there. You know, but okay, can't help it.
As far as the curriculum is concerned, therefore, there is a fair amount of emphasis on the teaching of.
Fine.
So the problem is more of talking. Of
talking, yes. That's all right. I mean,
not only talking, the faculties that are stimulated by different languages, the vibration, the atmosphere that different languages bring, I think what Kirikai is adding is not just language as language, but what comes behind with each language. If we agree that it would be a value to have the two because of what else is stimulated in terms of faculty development, it puts the value of the language study on a different footing. So there may be a lot of teaching of different languages, but the value of teaching them is not only in a hyper-linguistic sense. It is also the atmosphere and the culture and the development that it brings with it. So if we could re-bring that value to the learning of French, perhaps we could restore its status in the collectivity. And then, of course, we have to start all the beginning for Sanskrit. Tamil, something has to be worked on, I think, that it's not okay to say it's all right. There is some research necessary. That's all. It's not to criticize what we're doing. There is some research needed. Be away from school.
Since very young children learn language very soon, they don't need soil. Maybe it should be start from
research. Yes.
It's not a problem and they don't miss. Mm-hmm.
One thing in the library in school, also we have our English. I'm just starting French training this year for the children, and we need the French book. And we have really small shelves in French, and everywhere is in English. So this we have to be careful also that the priority page should not be of English in the beginning of French. The one who may have English, and the translation is all in English.
Anyway, I personally see that there is a research to be made in this subject because even teaching four languages is a big problem. If you said
it's a curriculum, does it mean that it is compulsory for everyone?
No, as I said, the first principle of curriculum is nothing is compulsory. The first statement to be made. In this curriculum, nothing is compulsory. This is what mother once told me. She said that, you see, in our school, there was an assumption that physical education is absolutely inevitable in our school. Even today, you cannot join the school if you are not a member of the physical education group. As a result, many people believe that according to the mother, physical education is compulsory. I had asked the mother one question because one student said, I don't like to go to sports. So mother said, why do you force her? In our school, nothing is compulsory, she said. These were her own words. She said, in our school, there's nothing compulsory. Now, this is a marvelous statement. So even when I say four languages, I make a distinction between three things. Those which are to be emphasized, those things which are to be encouraged, and those things which are optional. Nothing is compulsory. But certain things to be emphasized. I think we have to tell the church, we have to... You see, when a child is taken to body awareness in your experiments, which are admirable experiments. Now, I don't think anybody says, look, this is compulsory. It's being done. Nothing is compulsory. It's not compulsory. I'm sure if some child said, oh, I don't like it at all, I don't think we'll force him. But it's being done. Similarly, if these four languages are spoken, taught, given, it is what I call emphasis. You are emphasizing the learning of four languages. Actually, Mother said that all the spoken languages of the world are languages of Auroville. Not only these four languages, but all the spoken languages of the world. So it does not contradict the formula that in addition to four languages, if you have any other mother tongue, that also is to be cultivated. So you have five languages. In any case, there is another aspect of this question which has to be noticed, and it is what she said. Each language gives you a certain vibration and a certain development of faculty, which is like Sanskrit, for example. The faculty of pronunciation is best achieved in Sanskrit. The Shuddha Ucharana, the purity of pronunciation, is greatly emphasized in Sanskrit, as never. Like even, like le in French, L-E. Now, in Sanskrit, when le is written full, it is le. But when you want to make half, lil. And now there's a word called lil. There also, it ends with L-E. But pronunciation in English is lil. But in Sanskrit, if you write lil, then le has to be halant. Has to be half. So, there is a great precision in Sanskrit pronunciation. And there are many other emphases in Sanskrit language which are peculiar to Sanskrit language. Thirdly, there is also another aspect. Any student who can speak four languages will already be a foreigner in the world.
Forerunner.
He will be a forerunner in the world. Anybody who can speak these four languages, if you can make him proficient in four languages, even if he doesn't know anything else, this itself is sufficient for him to be a forerunner in the world. This is another aspect, I mean, of education. And therefore, we have to look at it from all these points of view. What capacities we want to give to our children? What will be his standing, his confidence? A child who knows so many languages, his confidence itself is very great. The contribution that language learning can give to the child is something not sufficiently understood. As Sri Aurobindo says, we have to realize that no clear thinking is possible without a clear mastery over language. So even for clear thinking, mastery over language is important. So our normal practices, language is taught very perfunctorily. You know, there is no attainment of mastery of a language. In fact, in all pedagogically today, you go anywhere in Delhi or in America, mastery over language is not emphasized. What happens is that while teaching language, we switch over to literature. And our assumption is that by reading a lot of literature, you master the language. But if you ask certain questions, like reporting what I said, suppose somebody says, now you report his speech. You may be a good literary artist, but reporting my speech accurately is a different capacity. And unless you have good mastery over the language, not over literature, but language, you cannot report my speech very correctly. Now, therefore, there is a difference between learning literature, language through literature and learning language through language skills. And this is pedagogically very much neglected. In fact, Mother once wrote a long letter on this subject. And she offended many people who are teaching literature through that letter for about a year. The whole controversy raged over that letter of the mother, when mother said, literature is only concentrated upon throat center. Throat center. This is upon the throat center. It is throat center, according to Sri Aurobindo, is for externalizing intelligence. Intelligence which is concentrated upon externalizing consciousness. And in order to be literary, you have to learn how to find novel and original ideas. And for the sake of novelties, you enter into a field which is not necessarily sublime. Now, this had created a lot of controversy in the ashram school, because many professors of literature wrote to the mother saying what mother Sri Aurobindo has written on literature. Because it is true, Sri Aurobindo has written so much on literature and has spoken of the importance of literature, that many professors of literature, one professor of Shantiniketan had come, he was a devotee of the mother, and for 1 year he was so sad that mother had written this, and that it is denigration of literature. Whereas Sri Aurobindo had spoken so much, and he had even said, poetry, music and art are the perfect education of the soul. And but, you know, mother's statements, as she has said, there's no dogma about her. She is a force in action. It is to counteract many people's exaggerated notions of literature. And she wanted to put everything in balance. But for people to write to mother saying, oh, Sri Aurobindo has written this, it was an irony, actually. Because to tell mother what Sri Aurobindo has written on literature. Anyway, I feel that this whole language is how to emphasize them, not to make them compulsory, but to how to emphasize these four languages is a matter of curricular research. I feel that there should be, I don't know, Mita and Tapas are not here, but I think Mita is working on this subject also quite seriously, she has shown me. I think this research requires to be, mother told me once that you should teach four languages simultaneously. You take a word and say this in English, this in French, this in Tamil, this in Sanskrit. Simultaneous. In Italian so and so. In Spanish it is this way. Etc. I think it also makes languages much easier. 50% of English words are French. Or vice versa.
More.
Or even more. It's a fact. Yeah, that is good. We lose because we have many subjects. It's a tyranny of subjects that prevents us from cultivating languages at a higher level. It's a fact, I know it. Why is it that we don't give so much of intro to languages? Because we feel he must learn mathematics, science, history, geography, all this. Now there is a school of thought which says that first 8 years children should learn only languages. This is a school of thought. Not that I agree with it entirely. But there's a great force in it. According to this school of thought, first 8 years should be devoted only to languages, because they say that if your languages are good, other things you can learn very easily afterwards.
You have to teach something to teach language, so of course you're teaching subjects as well as language.
That is also true.
The first 8 years would be...
Yes, that is also true. Yes, that is also true.
Teaching something in French.
So this is also part of curricular research.
That's not so many different ideas.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a very wide...
No, I'm giving this concreteness first of all, that these four languages kindly emphasize in our curriculum. And kindly emphasize mental calcul. Mother had spoken of mental calculation. Not mathematics. Mathematics is a different subject. It's not calcul. Mother made a distinction. She said, calcul ce n'est pas mathématique. Calcul is not mathematics. And so mother said, at the lower stages, you emphasize language and calcul. Now, she has not said further on this subject, but I would say that in the curriculum of the first 8 years, you should give a great emphasis on learning four languages and calcul, four operations of arithmetic. Because these four operations are actually a real training of the mind. the mind actually works best when mathematical problems are given. All the faculties of the mind of analysis, the left-hand faculties, they develop best. So, this calcul is very important as a basis for mathematics. Then higher mathematics can be learned later on. So, my suggestion is four languages and calcul, plus anything else that the child wants. These two things to be emphasized at this level. In addition to this spinal cord, and on the right-hand wing, lots of stories. You give literature, but mainly through stories, through drama, through recitation of poetry, and through creative expressions, drawing, and through music, and through dance. These, I would say, you emphasize strongly in the first 8 years. Plus, whatever child wants to learn, let him learn. You can allow him anything else. He wants to do lot of mathematics, even at the lower level, fine. If he wants to do lot of physiology, let him do that. He wants to do a lot of physics, even at the how and why, for example. Many questions of how and why can be introduced at the lower level. They include geography, physics, chemistry, lots of questions, only through how and why. And then, as a result, if he wants to read on physics, he can read. He can be helped. It is optional. But what you emphasize is basically what I told you just now. The spinal cord of this, to know oneself and to learn, to control oneself, then four languages and calcul, plus stories, dramas, recitations, dance, and any creative drawing and so on. These are to be emphasized in the first 8 years.
14 years.
Up to 14 years. Plus anything that he wants to do, in addition to this. But these are to be emphasized. Anything else as a child wants to do, it should be encouraged. It's for encouragement. And even at the level of 14, if some gifted children want to do some optional subjects, real study, you should allow him. And should be facility should be given. So, curriculum should be of such a nature that this emphasis, this encouragement, and this kind of optionality is available. Well, this is my reading at present, but I would like invite people who want to make assist curriculum. In addition to this, I would emphasize two subjects which are not normally emphasized at this stage, and that is astronomy and geography. You see, apart from mathematics, which I said is a great mental gymnastics, as far as the empirical science is concerned, nothing is more concrete to the child except as astronomy and geography, from the point of concreteness. And these two subjects are normally not taught, except in a very general way. You speak about stars and galaxies and so on. But nothing more than that. But astronomy would be a very good subject of study. In fact, in Indian system of education, Jyotisha, that is astronomy, was given the highest importance. It was right from the childhood, Jyotish was taught to everybody. Astronomy. So this is my suggestion, and when I come back again, if there is a group of people who are preparing syllabus or curriculum, or if all of us join together like this, I'll be very happy. If you all can frame, if people can bring some of their ideas. In fact, I requested Siyash is here. I told him to prepare his own. You know, he has done he's a physicist himself.
Right.
I had a good talk with him. And I have told him that you just give me your autobiographical development of study of physics. You know, one of the best ways of learning, of preparing curriculum is to take biographies of some individuals. How they learned a given subject. What was the curve of their development. And if you compare 3, 4, 5 such biographies, you get a good idea as to how to develop. Instead of discussing in theoretical manner, you take a biography. How you learned music, for example. I don't know if you know music or not. or how you learned art, for example. If I ask her, how you learned art in your life. If you give a biographical account, it will be a very interesting study. Seriously, if you can bring next time when we come, I would like to come to only reading of the papers by individuals, how I learned certain things, by what stage.
We have a discussion on the core syllabus.
This also, yes.
This can be the subject.
Yeah, certainly. Please do it. So when I come next time, let us continue, if you all agree.
Yeah.
I'll be happy if all are present, because I want this to be participants of everybody. We all, it's a learning process for all of us.
You can make photocopies of
this, huh? Dr. Asha Thirabhaka
copies. Every school can be given and then they can distribute it.
Have you got it?
Copy it.
You have got, no? He has brought so many at least.
Okay.
At least a few.
Yes.
You see, Mary has got one, Shali.